they think of.
All right.
That's not the right page. It's, maybe it's 55. Yeah. Page 54.
Yeah, but on substance, back to 45.
Well, the quote starts, in order to reach the substance.
Now, that's a line on page 45.
What?
In order to reach the substance, one is supposed to graduate by the dark mind.
Where's that say?
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Page 45, which is the first purport. In the middle of the page, the end of the second paragraph. In order to reach the very substance, one must proceed gradually by developing knowledge of the categories. This is a play on the words that appear in the next purport, the next verse. Vastu. So under substance you can write vastu, because that's what vastu means. Vedyam, in text 2, the Sanskrit reads, Vedyam vastavam atra vastu shividam tapatrayam mulanam. So, according to Gopi Pranadana, this vastavam vastu means substantial substance. If you said it, his explanation was it's a play on words. It's a literary device to emphasize the word vastu, substantial substance, and as opposed to substantial substance or substance, is category. Huh? Oh, category. So in the purport on page 54, Srila Prabhupada indicates that category has to do with the energies. If you look on the bottom of page 54, that first paragraph, first line of the paragraph, nothing is apart from the substance, but at the same time the energies are different from the substance. So energy and energetic. Categories and substance. I believe it's in the paragraph just before this. Where all manifestations or all emanations is also identified as category. So in other words, besides energy coming from Krishna, so many expansions or incarnations, because this is one of the questions, six questions, please describe the incarnations. Describe it for us. Because this will help us understand the energetic source. So now here is another term, ashrita. Literally that means one was taking shelter of the shelter. So the shelter and the person who is taking shelter. Just like in nectar of devotion, these two terms are used. Vishaya and Ashraya. These terms are the qualities of Krishna, or Krishna himself is the abode of all rasa. That's a statement in Vedanta Sutra that also comes in the second verse. Rasa by Saha. The personality of Krishna is the reservoir of all rasa, or taste, in transcendental life. But in order to experience Krishna, one has to take shelter in Krishna, and by taking shelter in Krishna, one experiences rasa. This is the science of Deva devotion. How rasa comes, manifest, is by taking shelter. So what Prabhupada is saying in this page 45, we can come to understand the ashraya, or the substance, by very carefully understanding the categories. And I'm going to read a purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila Chapter 2, text number 91. Adi Lila 2, 91. I won't read the Sanskrit. Well, it's the 10 items that comprise the 10 subject matters of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is being quoted by Krishna Das Kaviraj from Canto 2 Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 10, Text 1 and 2. So out of the list of the 10 items, the 10th item is shelter. The Prabhupada uses this term, samambonam, several places in the first chapter. So this is a Latin term that Western people may be more familiar with than ashraya. But when he's using the term samambonam, you'll see, because it's here, it appears here also, it means Krishna-specific personality, Godhead Krishna, the source of all incarnations, the energetic source, and understanding the relationship of these energies to Krishna is facilitated by understanding the other 9 topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it starts sarga, disarga, stana. Stana means maintenance. How the universe is created, sub-creation, the principal creation, sub-creation, and its maintenance. The next to the last one is annihilation, nirodha. Then, Poshana, how the living entity is given protection. It's one that surrenders to Krishna, is protected by Krishna. The creative power, the list of manus and their descendants. The list of incarnations is a principal topic, so it's introduced into the Srimad Bhagavatam as a question by the sages, and then spoken of by Shukadeva Goswami. Then liberation, and the last of them is ashraya. So here's what Prabhupada writes about ashraya. So this is number 10 of the subjects of Srimad Bhagavatam. The transcendence, the summum bonum, from whom everything emanates. Kilo, when you cough, because we're so close, can you please cover, because I don't want to get what you got. From whom everything emanates, upon whom everything rests, and in whom everything merges after annihilation. So that paper I passed on yesterday, the cause of all causes, meaning the source of creation, maintenance, and annihilation, the source of the creator, maintainer, and annihilator. That means ashraya. That's Krishna. He is the source and support of all. The ashraya is also called the Supreme Brahman, as in the Vedanta Sutra. Srimad Bhagavatam especially describes this Supreme Brahman as the ashraya. Sri Krishna is this ashraya, and therefore the greatest necessity of life is to study the science of Krishna. In a separate paragraph, one sentence paragraph, Srimad Bhagavatam accepts Sri Krishna as the shelter of all manifestations because Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the ultimate source of everything, the supreme goal of all. Then the last paragraph, Prabhupada says, two different principles are being considered herein, namely the ashraya, here written on the board, the object providing shelter, and ashrita, the dependence requiring shelter. The ashrita exists under the original principle, ashraya. Now listen to this next sentence. The first nine cantos described as the first nine avatars, excuse me, described in the first, the first nine categories described in the first nine cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, from creation to liberation, including the Purusha avatars, incarnations, marginal energy, or the living entities, external energy, or the material world, are all ashrita. Then, the prayers of Srimad Bhagavatam, however, aim for the ashraya tattva. The prayers in the Srimad is an important sentence because, and we're reading from the seventh chapter, the son of Drona punished. The first set of prayers that appear in the Bhagavatam are the prayers by Arjuna when the Brahmastra is coming, fired by Ashwatthama, ready to kill him. So he's offering prayers directly to identify and to help him take shelter of the shelter. The prayers of Srimad Bhagavatam, however, aim for the ashraya tattva of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. The great souls, expert in describing Srimad Bhagavatam, have very diligently delineated the other nine categories, sometimes by direct narrations and sometimes by indirect narrations, such as stories, or meaning like an allegory. The real purpose of doing this is to know perfectly the absolute supreme transcendence, Sri Krishna, for the entire creation, both material and spiritual, rests on the body of Sri Krishna. So, again, the reference from the first purport is, in order to reach the substance, we must proceed gradually by developing knowledge of the categories. So, therefore, the title, The Lotus Feet, means to approach the wonderful feature of Krishna's form by first very carefully approaching his lotus feet, very clearly, gradually developing an understanding of these various categories. Because as you can see, the nine categories that precede the summum bonum, or ashraya, they're already indicated in the first canto. But very careful approach is made to those subject matters. Well, that took 15 minutes. I wanted to... thank you, Tom. I wanted to respond to the question, the same question that both Kamalini and Akiladar were asking yesterday about the eternality of the Srimad Bhagavatam topic again, Mother Kamalini. And Akiladar, your question about, well, if, even if it's eternal, it must have been different if Krishna didn't appear in the other 999 times in each day of Brahma. Krishna appears once in each day of Brahma, but in each day of Brahma there are 1,000 yuga cycles. So there's 1,000 junctures between Dwarka and Kali Yuga. So Keeladhar's question was, in this particular yuga, Kali Yuga, Krishna appeared in the end of the preceding Dwarpa Yuga, but what about the other 999 Kali Yugas where Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, is not appearing? Wouldn't Srimad Bhagavatam then have to be a little different? That's your question. So, I consulted with his intelligence, Gopi Pranadana Prabhu. And he explained to me that Jiva Goswami, who made the review, I said what I said based on the Tattva Sandarbha Sutra, that Srimad Bhagavatam, according to Jiva Goswami, is eternal. In fact, the way Gopi put it is, when we speak in common public circles, we say, and Prabhupada puts it in his books this way also, that the Bhagavatam is Smriti. So what's the difference between Shruti and Smriti? Who can say? Say what's in it?
Shruti is the memory. The memory. And Shruti is Smriti. I mean, Shruti is hearing and Smriti is remembering.
Come, Prabhupada?
My understanding is in reference to the Vedic literature.
Speak loud enough.
In reference to the Vedic literature, Shruti means that which is directly heard from Krishna through Lord Brahma. And Smriti is commentary on Shruti, that which is composed.
Shall you agree?
In reference to
sort of, I might say a little differently.
Yes, say a little louder too.
That Shruti is the original four Vedas, and Smriti is the Puranas, the Vyasas, that are compiled afterwards.
Do all of our newer devotees understand that explanation? Gerald, you want to say something?
Yeah. Smriti means something which is like history, right?
Smriti means commentary upon. Okay. Anything that is commentary upon, or explanation of. Shruti. Explanation of Smriti is Smriti. And Shruti is that which the eternal Vedas that directly emanate from the personality of Godhead.
And those commentaries are eternal.
According to Jiva Goswami, he cites two authorities in Tattva Sandarbha for the Kamalini, indicating that Srimad Bhagavatam is eternal and not changing. So, one of those references comes from Vishnu Purana. This is quoted in Tattva Sandarbha. And in Vishnu Purana there is a statement that at the end of every Dwarpa Yuga, a Vyasadeva, it's not always the same Jiva, but a Vyasadeva appears for the purpose of abridging or shortening the one Purana that exists prior to the end of Dwarpa Yuga. That one Purana exists also on the heavenly planets, and its length is 1 billion verses. And he shortens it to 400,000 and then divides into 18. That's the statement from Vishnu Purana. Let me just finish. So another reference that he gives of the 400,000 Srimad Bhagavatam that is comprised of 18,000. Then another reference he gives is from Iskanda Purana, saying that at the time of Matsya's appearance, because all of the Vedas appear to be in a disturbed state, he speaks all of the Vedas personally once again, beginning with the Puranas, and he retells them, the word is used verbatim. So therefore, Jiva Goswami concludes that actually Srimad Bhagavatam is in the category of Shruti. Although modern scholars have a different version, they accept that only the four Vedas, and actually as we heard Ravindra say, only the first nine skandhas or sections of the Rig Veda are the actual original Veda. But we can you certainly get away with saying the four Vedas, meaning all the hymns and all of the mantras, that's Vedic or Veda or Shruti. So according to these two references, Jiva Goswami is saying, Gopi was qualifying, this is our own internal understanding. We don't speak this in the general public. Prabhupada doesn't put this way in his books because scholars would immediately reject it. But Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest authority, and it is eternal. And it's not at all necessary that persons who are, that Vyasadeva, who is compiling the Srimad Bhagavatam and all the Puranas, has to have immediately the preceding or concurrently experienced Swayam Bhagavan Krishna coming and performing his Vrindavan Kalipa. We can certainly know about it by the empowerment of Krishna and the hearing process. It's there, it's all there in the 1 billion verses of the one Purana before it's divided. Yes, Jagotami?
The Itihasas or the Purana are also called Pancham Veda, Fifth Veda.
Actually, there are, besides my understanding of this one, is that the Itihasas are different than the Puranas and the Itihasas which make up the Fifth Veda. The Itihasas consist of Ramayana and Mahabharata. And the Puranas are yet another category besides so Puranas and Itihasas are considered the Fifth Veda. The Upanishads are part of each of the four Vedas. Have a certain number of Upanishads, and if because the four Vedas are sacrificial mantras, and the philosophical explanation of those sacrifices are in very tight philosophical shlokas coded in the Upanishads. And there are sutras that are even more coded that are the explanation of, well, not explanation, but the philosophy of even more abstract or more condensed, more compressed philosophical presentation of all of the Vedas.
See, Vyasadeva
is a literary incarnation. Yes?
So, we hear that the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra.
Yeah.
So, this make it, I mean, of course you say that our general understanding is Shruti. So that's why it's considered Smriti?
It's considered Smriti because it's commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Yeah. And because of the form of it also. As Krishna Kripa's question indicates, it's not Upanishad, the style that is all, it's history. Therefore, Smriti, an explanation of the philosophical portion of the Vedas, as all the Puranas are. Excellent. Historical descriptions or enactments of the philosophy found in the four Vedas and the accompanying Upanishads. Therefore called Smriti. Another reason it's Smriti is what you just said, commentary specifically by Vyas on Vedanta Sutra. Right. So what I'd like to do now is first I'd like to explain or say apologize for my not being properly prepared for this whole course. Some of you may have detected I've been in some anxiety about the whole thing because I had expected a certain block of time to prepare. To do the course the way I wanted to do the course, it would have taken a lot more preparation. Just like I appreciated very much your suggestion at the end of yesterday's class, which was what I really wanted to do in the very beginning but didn't have time to do. Because to go through, even just to go through this one volume and abstract the themes and identify where those themes are expressed and put it together in a nice presentation, so that we could pass it out at the beginning of each class. Let's go over the following. You know, we're taking a lot of preparation. Very thorough, time and energy consuming preparation, which I wasn't able to do. So, thank you for being patient and sitting through what was a not what I wanted to do kind of a presentation. So what I was thinking to do instead was I'll do what I originally wanted to do, but after the course is completed, I'll just send out, if you like, I'm prepared to put that information together and just send it to you in the mail along with your grades. Hopefully you can get it together that quickly. So at least you'll have it for your own examination. If you take the time to go through, you might find it to be a useful tool. Say if you need to give a, like I said, to give a class or just for your own referencing purposes. At least not for this particular volume, I'll try to do that as soon as possible and send it out with my apologies again. The way I wanted to proceed with the class now, is to hand out the short questions, have you fill them out now, the next 20 minutes, exchange papers, and we'll discuss each question, and you can grade each other's questions and answers. Yes, thank you for asking that question. I'd like you to answer the questions that you can without looking in the book, and then if you have to look something up, then just indicate that you had to look it up. In other words, if I had had it more together, probably you wouldn't have to do it that way. Yeah. You could just do it with your book closed and know the answers. Yes?
That includes notebook and
some of the
books.
If you have to use some other reference, please indicate that you have to use some other reference. Sutra explained by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or his followers, the explanations are also there in the Nipedanta Sutra. Has to be. Because otherwise, how is the commentary getting some meaning other than what's already there? So it's there, but not clear. Unless one has heard it through disciplic succession. So, by hearing, I stated this in very one of our classes, that one of my appreciations from doing this study that I've been doing is the Prabhupada's purports make the verses which it's there, but you can't see it.
Right,
but also that transcendentalist technique penetrates the esoteric importance of the Yanta Sutra. This is not applicable. Say it again. It is applicable. Because whatever is in Vedanta Sutra is but a code form of what's in the four Vedas. And whatever is in Vedanta Sutra is further explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. There's no new information that's being imparted, just that the explanation opens it up, reveals what's already there in all those places. So hearing the proper explanation makes accessible that understanding in Vedanta Sutra and in the four Vedas and everywhere. No, they say the same thing in a slightly different way. The very beginning chapters of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada is right away indicating the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. Throughout, we're getting the benefit of hearing the final conclusion, even the beginning. So how that conclusion is gradually being established step by step, we're getting a, you know, not only a head start, but we're getting the full thing. Whereas someone who doesn't know the conclusion won't possibly be able to understand even the preliminary portions of Bhagavad Gita. They won't be able to understand it properly or fully. Anything further for discussion? Yes?
There was one verse that I kind of intrigued me a little bit. It's in 32 of the same chapter.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure there is an explanation, but maybe you can comment on it.
Well, yeah, we talked about this in class. You're 1332?
Yes.
Okay, that's page 182. What he's saying is, this is in the chapter 3 is the chapter revealing the incarnations. The list of incarnations is presented. Really, he's upstairs indisposed at the moment. He's looking at me and then looking at the cloud. I'm filling in the dead space. So, in this list of incarnations, two things. Virat Rupa doesn't appear. I just gave the answer to one question. Virat Rupa doesn't appear in the list of incarnations. Second is, so that these incarnations cannot be misunderstood to be material manifestations, this verse is making it clear they're not. They're not just subtle representations of the gross body. They're more subtle than subtle. They're on another platform altogether, spiritual platform. The soul is on that spiritual, and third thing, the soul is on that platform also. If the soul misidentifies the self to be either the subtle or gross body, then he's in illusion. He won't be able to understand the incarnations or himself.
Well, that part was clear. What you're saying, the use of word, when you say subtle concessions of form, which is without formal shape, and it's unseen, unheard, and unmanifest.
Yeah.
So especially without material form or shape.
Without material, means without material shape. Gopi gave the answer to that question at the end of class this morning. We're taking, when it says no form, it means the second meaning. The secondary meaning is accepted because it's appropriate. Because the principal meaning is not appropriate. There is spiritual form, and therefore the secondary form is taken. Secondary meaning is taken.
that is, without material form. Without formal shape means without material form. Yes?
I'm true and false question three.
Yeah.
When it says consequently is worship alone, does that mean alone of the three who have it?
Yes, of the three, worship of Vishnu only.
Of those three?
Yeah. Okay, so. Yes?
Just a question about the material cult question.
Which one?
The first one. You can see that ties to the five practices of Christianity. So, like, Krishna says, I can provide my Gita and heaven, he will give you the intelligence if you are more bhakti. So, it's like, you're getting intelligence, but jnana, but it's coming from Krishna. So apparently you do need the jnana, where we can give it to you, but you don't get the jnana by cultivating jnana.
That's right. That's the correct understanding. The answer is false. I purposely worded it the way that I did. Make you pause just as you paused. Instead of just giving a mechanical answer, you had to think a little bit. You did it.
You could think a little bit and get it wrong.
Okay, so, and thank you all for sitting through patiently a jumbled presentation. And hand the answers in before you leave Gitanagari Dham. And I think I know where to send grades for everybody here, and also the themes of this volume, where those themes are described. Has anyone still having one of these papers to turn in that hasn't done it? Please turn it in now, or before you leave Gitanagari Dham.
I was going to ask Maharaj for the answer. I mean, there's several verses that answer the different questions. Maybe that can be in the group too.
Yeah, sure. You mean just for these questions or the whole one?
For the six questions on the sages, there is also all the first canto. The one we cover.
My arm would fall off. I'm exhausted. I can do from chapter 2 and chapter 3.
Right.
But then, you know, you can do the whole Bhagavatam with that structure. Like so many things simultaneously going on in the Bhagavatam. You can tune into it.
But there's a clue. There's a clue where this
Chapter 2 and 3, I'll try to do that. The verse where knowledge is a convincing factor of bhakti is 1:335. Thank you very much. Shiva Prabhupada.